Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's give a rousing Tulare County welcome to our warm-up speaker, all the way from Bakersfield, Richard.
Hello, I'm Richard, and it's an honor to be here. It's a blessing. Thank you, guys.
Hi, Richard.
Welcome.
I'll start off by saying I'm a dirty drunk, and drinking was fun for me. You know, I spent a good 25 years drinking, but these last 3 years it got pretty outrageous and it stopped being fun for me. You know, I'm a single father. I raised my son alone, and I picked up this bad habit to try to cover up my depression, my anxiety, because I always thought I wasn't good enough to be a father, to be a friend, to be anything. And when I would drink, I thought it was fixing something, but it wasn't. It just made me a lot worse, you know. I did really good with my regular life, man. You know, I was living two lives, alcoholic, and then the normal Richard. Richard was a manager. Richard's a single dad. Richard's an all-around good guy with a heart of gold. Drunk Richard, it's a dickhead. Excuse my language. You know, that's the guy nobody wants to be around at the parties. He's drunk. He's obnoxious. He's pretty big. We're going to have trouble taking him out of the party. So, you know, I would always have this rule where I wouldn't drink when I had to work. But 3 years ago, I broke that rule. And I started drinking every day. On Graveyard, I met up with a bunch of guys who were on the management team with me. We had money and we had time. So we ended up being local regulars at a bar. And I thought that was cool. That's what I was shooting for, you know? Oh, but come to think about it, who wants to be known at a damn bar? Like, this ain't Cheers, you know what I'm saying? So I went on a badass binge. And last year, about this time, it's kind of a blessing I'm up here. Last year at this time, my brother was dying. He's bad in addiction. He's addicted to crystal meth. And he slams heroin. And I was over there drinking 14, 15 days straight, calling off for work, you know? And this place I work, they put up with me so much. But I was drinking. I don't know how I even survived through that. Waking up, drinking, passing out, drinking. I even think I woke up and drank in my dream. Shit, I don't remember. But I know it was pretty horrible. My body didn't recover the same. I looked in the mirror, and I didn't recognize who I was. I wasn't that father. I wasn't that friend. I wasn't that manager. I was just a dirty drunk. You know what I mean? And it was scary because I had a seizure and I thought I was dying. You know, it was 14 days, 15 days of straight drinking. And it was all because an excuse that my brother was dying. Well, my brother's still alive. You know, God's keeping him alive. I'm thankful for that. But that was just an excuse for me to get hammered, man. You know, like, I told my work just so I could have that excuse because I was tired of the ordinary. I wanted to escape from the ordinary, you know, that circle, go to work, come home, be a dad, go to sleep. Well, shit, fuck it. I want to go do something different. I want to be a drunk. And I was hanging around with people that I shouldn't have been hanging around with. Well, I had this seizure, man, and I'm going into convulsions. I thought I was going to die. I don't know what happened, man. I passed out on the floor. My dad was going to take me to the hospital. And I just said, hey, stop right here. I'm going to die. I'm scared. And I get out the car and I throw myself and I just start shaking on the ground. And I'm just on the middle of the asphalt looking up. And I kid you not, man, I was hallucinating. I seen Jesus, an alien, Elvis, a naked lady. I don't know. You know, it was crazy, man. And through this whole hallucination, man, I really thought I was going to die. I go to KMC, a local hospital in Bakersfield, and I'm in there screaming my ass off, man, like, hey, I don't want to die. And these people were just looking at me like I was crazy, and I didn't understand why. I really thought I was going to die. They say you just need a rest. Well, after a while, I calmed down a little bit, and then I was admitted into 3B. And that was the most embarrassing time I've ever had because I was hearing shit that wasn't there. And I was trying to talk to the nurses, and I couldn't get none of their attentions because they thought I was talking to myself. You know? And it's, yeah, it's funny. You know, like, hey, nurse, can I get... They just ignored me, like, oh, okay, cool, whatever. But I got out of the hospital. The next day, I looked in the mirror. I didn't recognize myself again, and I started bleeding from the nose. I thought my brain was swollen, man. I thought something was wrong. I was scared. I was like, man, am I going to be able to do my job? Am I going to be able to be a dad? I don't know what's going to happen. So I went back to the hospital, and they kept me that day. And I got out. I was like, hey, this is it. I've said this before, but this is the time. I'm going to stop drinking because this ain't worth it. So I went to IOP, Synergy in Bakersfield. And, you know, the groups helped, but they didn't help good enough. I went on another binge. I ended up wrecking my car. I ended up going to jail. I ended up losing my job. And they did a surgery on me where they put a Vivitrol implant, right? And this Vivitrol implant guaranteed me 90 days of sobriety. It lasted a week. And I was back to the bottle. And, you know, I got a new job. I was screwing up. I was out there on the streets being a dummy, neglecting my son. That's what the alcohol made me do. But I chose to put that in my body. So I had to take responsibility for that. But I found a job, and then I noticed I was back on the same pattern, man. My job was in deep shit with a new job. I was only there for a month. And I was about to get fired. And, you know, my best friend, which I respect a lot, she told me I had a problem. And a lot of people told me I had a problem, but I didn't want to believe it. And I sat back and I thought about it. They told me, you push everybody away. And I did push everybody away. And then I would wonder why I would be so lonely, nobody wanted to be around me. But it was me. I was too busy worrying about my alcohol addiction to even care about my son, my family, or my friends. And that's not the person I am when I'm sober. So my buddy Levi hits me up. And he's like, are you okay? And for some reason, this guy was always there when I was withdrawing. Some reason, through the grace of God, man, he would text me right at the right moments. He got me through some withdrawals that I wouldn't have got through by myself. And I told him what was going on. And he said, hey, I'll come with you to AA. So he had the patience to come with me and sit down with me and introduce me to this program. And let me be honest, coming in here, you know, I'm from the east side of Bakersfield. It's kind of considered weak to give up, you know. And I always cared what people thought about me. I didn't want to be considered weak. But I came in here. I was nervous. I was in the corner. You know, I felt like I stood out like a sore thumb. Tatted up guy, 300 pounds, you know. Just scared, man. I was scared. I will admit that. And the program in Bakersfield, my first meeting was the Alano Club. And they welcomed me with open arms. And started getting involved more with the AA. More with the AA. At first, it was a little bit hard because, you know, I don't know if I wanted to accept it. I don't know if I was buying what they were selling me. But, you know, as I got in, man, I started really telling myself, like, look at these men, man. You know, like, there's some men here that I went to Broken Neck and I met Mitch. And I'm thankful and blessed that I met you. That really touched my life with their stories. I sat and I looked at some people and they were, you know, you hear their stories. Some were homeless. Some didn't have stuff. And then you look at them like they're really doing good. And it's because of this program. So that's when I decided to take a big step and admit that I needed this. I was powerless. Life was unmanageable. So I get more involved. I go to meetings and I want to stay sober. So I enter the program. And this worked more than that surgery did. More than me being a broken record telling everybody, hey, I'm not going to drink no more. I'm not going to drink no more. I just got tired of all that. You know, It's through the grace of God. One day, after like my third meeting, I got down on my knees and I said, God, you know, please forgive me. Because I would lie to people saying I'm not going to drink. I lied to my son, man, countless of times. And he remembers. He's 6 years old, you know, a beautiful baby. And I would sit there looking at him. Daddy's never going to drink again. Okay, Daddy, good, you know. And I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. Daddy couldn't take him to Chuck E. Cheese because Daddy was faded. So I asked God to come into my life. I went to church, and I just asked him to keep me strong. And that moment, I realized that it wasn't weak asking for help, especially accepting God. That's strength. It takes a grown man to admit when they're wrong and to ask for help. And if you're new in this program and you're not sure about it, man, just stay on it because this this really works, man. Like, I'm proof. You know what I'm saying? I kid about it. When I came in here, I was bald. I have a little bit of hair now. You know what I'm saying? I had friends named Casper and Creeper, and I got friends named Heather and Dave. You know? And it's just accepting, man, because it's the truth, though. It shows how much of a jump, you know, because when you get involved in this program, you got to switch your whole lifestyle. And I hung around a bunch of people that were failing was accepted. And asking for help was weakness. And I had to get around some people that been through it and that weren't scared to make that change. Because now, man, I don't got much, but I got enough to where I'm happy. I got a truck that gets me to work. I got a son who loves me. You know, I got a beautiful godson. You know, and I got a best friend that's like a sister to me. And I'm actually welcomed over there because I'm not throwing up and pissing on the side of the house and shit like that. You know, they actually want me there. They invite me. I'm like, what the hell? You know? But, you know, it took me just reaching a desperation, man. Like, shit, you know, where is this shit going to take me, man? Jail? Like, for what? What's the whole point of doing this? To stop being fun. You know, I don't think it's normal for somebody to drink in 14 days straight, 15 days straight. I don't think that's normal, man, getting carried away in an ambulance, thinking you're going to die. You know, and this program helped me and gave me the tools to stay sober. I'm not going to lie, man, I still have dark days. You know what I'm saying? But my days ain't as dark as they were when I was drinking. You know, I'm thankful I don't got to wake up to those cold sweats, the shakes, the anxiety. The diarrhea, you know. I'm thankful for that. And I don't know where I'd be if I wasn't here doing this program. And I'm sorry because I'm just thinking right now, like, as we were coming to this, my sponsor Dave picked me up. And we passed by the park. And the park is where I did a lot of my drinking. All my friends were there. I seen them. And I told my sponsor, hey, man, if I wasn't in this program, you know, I'd probably be right there getting faded. And that's not what I'm supposed to do. I'm a father, man. You know, I'm a father who raises a boy, and I got to be the man that I want him to be. And I can't be the man that I want him to be if I'm over there faded. He's not going to respect me, you know. I mean, I don't want to be that person. So every day I hit a meeting, every day in Bakersfield, except Saturday. That's my family day. But I'm trying to work this program to the best of my abilities, and I'm really, really thankful for my sponsor, my buddy Levi, for helping me, and my friends from Bakersfield who came out here to support me. You know, it's just really a blessing, man. Like, I could sit here, I'm trying to figure out, like, I never understood gratitude, and that's what I'm trying to think until I came in here. You know, my thing was like, oh, I got to go to work. Oh, I got this piece of shit car. I got this. But I didn't understand that you got to be grateful. Oh, you got a job to go to. You got a truck that gets you to point A to point B. You got a son. I've asked for all this stuff, man, and I didn't appreciate it. You know, and it took losing some shit that I had to sit back and be thankful for what I did have, what I do got now. You know, like I'm saying, man, a Super Bowl passed. And I didn't get drunk. I was with some sober buddies from the program. And I didn't care about the game. You know, I'm a Cowboy fan. So, you know. So, I'm glad the Rams lost. But I wasn't concerned with the game. I was there with some AA buddies. And my moment that I was blessed with was seeing my godson smile for the first time. I was telling the guys, too, that Tuesday, my day off, I had dinner with my son. I helped him with his homework. And we were singing Tupac on the way out of the restaurant. You know, and it's through this program that I can do that. That I'm sober. You know what I mean? Before I'd be shit-faced drunk, I don't know where I'd be. Or if I'd be in the right mind, I'd be passed out somewhere. You know, my life could have went a lot of ways after I lost my job. Because I was out there being stupid on the streets. And I'm thankful that I came into this program. And, you know, I'm here. Every chance I get, I want to help out and give back. I go to church. I try to help out there. You know, I try to support the people in this program, and I'm trying to work this to the best of my ability. Because without you guys, without my friends in Bakersfield, I wouldn't be able to do it. I'm sorry. That's all I got right now. All right. Thank you.
All righty, ladies and gentlemen, let's give a rousing welcome to our featured speaker, Mitch.
My name is Mitch. I'm an alcoholic. You know, tonight I realized that I only know a little. And that's about as good as Mitch gets. And it's taken, all the drinking career, everything that's happened in my life, and especially the last almost 4.5 years of Alcoholics Anonymous, to realize when I realized I know only a little, then the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is working, because it was never anything close to that. I mean, usually I knew only a little, but I would never get up here and say that I only know a little. And of course, the last paragraph in the big book, it says we realize we only know a little, and I'm very thankful for everything that I've learned since I've been here. I was born in Exeter, you know, and I've lived 26 miles from the hospital I was born in my entire life. I guess they said I would never get very far when I was a kid, and they were right. You know, I've always been there. But I drank alcoholically probably in junior high, 12, 13 years old or whatever. I mean, I set out to drink for effect. It worked. And, you know, early on, I really struggled with the disease aspect of it, you know. And then after I had a little bit of clarity, it really makes a lot of sense, because from the time I took that first drink until I found you guys, you know, I would get a little clarity. I didn't even remember my first drink until after this meeting one night, probably at about 3 or 4 months of sobriety. I was driving my sponsor home, and he lived in the neighborhood I grew up in. And I said, wow, there it was right there, and it just came to me, you know, and things are still coming to me, and I'm right where I belong. You know, I've heard a lot lately, and I've heard it, you know, in my time here, that people kind of describe feeling different. I certainly felt different. I don't know why. As a middle child, I guess my older brother, you know, he got all the first child stuff. My little brother was the baby. You know, I don't know if that had anything to do. I'm just kind of convinced that I'm just wired different. I'm bodily and mentally different from my fellows. And I learned all that here, too. Talking about the progression of alcoholism, I loved it. I thought, you know, I could drink like a gentleman. I rarely set out to get intoxicated, and I always ended up intoxicated. I mean, I was always, my great obsession was to control and enjoy it almost every time. You know, I had lots of events where I probably knew, you know, it was going to get pretty loose and pretty crazy and stuff like that. But my great obsession was always to control and enjoy it. I just wanted to find the sweet spot. You know, and I always just shot right past it. You know, I mean, it's, well, if 3 makes me feel like this, you know, 33 is going to make me feel real good. And I never really realized it. You know, all the crazy thing, I was arrested 3 times before I was 18 years old, all under the influence of alcohol. And back in those days, it would have been late 70s, I guess. You know, it wasn't quite as serious an offense. I got arrested at the big Cowhide football game was my big arrest. That's why I say I only had two high schools and just ripped. We ran from the cops and I ran into a bush and threw up in the back of a cop car. And they were trying to get me to clean it up. My parents had to pick me up. They let go of me. I just fell and not a lot of consequences. Later on that summer, I had passed out at Bass Lake going to like a two-day show, a rodeo up there in Oakhurst. And I drew the bull named Nuno, and his rank, and I was a cowboy. And I was actually throwing up on the bull's back in the morning, you know, and I was like, and that didn't turn out. Well, that summer was not a very good summer, but I guess by the time I turned 18, I learned how to stay out of jail. I've grown up in rural Tulare County and dirt roads and the Frying Kern Canal and stuff, and they were all my haunts. You know, I could drive, you know, from Ivanhoe to Strathmore with just crossing pavement, you know, and I'd drive through. We knew a lot of the farmers and drive through there, and it's a little different world back in those days. But incrementally, like I said, from the very start, from that very first time, my times between drinks came closer together, and of course the amount I took, you know, to, you know, maybe the sweet spot at that time was 7, you know, so 77, you know, just total oblivion. In the summer, not the summer, but New Year's 1981 was New Year's Eve. I was drinking with my cousin and a good friend of mine at a New Year's Eve party out north of Visalia, and you know, I was controlling and enjoying it. My cousin and my friend they were just totally wasted, and I was driving, and I took my friend home and dropped him off, and I knew my cousin was just ripped because he'd like to fight and stuff like that, and he was 6'7" and about 225, 19 years old, and just, I mean, he's just an awesome man. And I tried to get the keys from him. I was still living with my folks at the time, but they would come pretty close to, you know, I mean, they had come accustomed to me coming in late at night and stuff, and it was frowned upon, but they just kind of knew it. And I definitely knew it would be no problem to have my cousin stay, but I couldn't get the keys from him. And I made it like a mile and a half away from the house and ran into another drunk driver. And I was woke up about, I don't know, an hour and a half, 2 hours after getting in and passing out. And he was in a coma for like 20 days. The real significance behind that is at, I don't know, I was 18 or 19, 19 years old, I guess, I made my first solemn oath, you know, not to drink. And it only lasted, you know, maybe 4 weeks, a month tops. And because I wasn't that bad, you know, I didn't drink that way. I didn't, you know, and just kept the increments getting closer and closer together. By the time 1985 rolled around, I became a daily drinker, always wanting to control and enjoy it. Never want to come out. I remember, you know, waking up to work and, you know, I'm not going to drink today. I was feeling shitty and stuff like that. And, you know, about 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, feeling better. And then, you know, the truck stopping at the first liquor store on the way home. So primarily beer, you know, I'd take a shot here and there, but just large amounts of beer. Other things I had to, you know, I quit smoking marijuana on my own because I didn't like the way it felt. You know, marijuana was very popular in those days. It's been about like 1980. I quit probably about the time of my cousin's accident or even a little bit before because it was wrecking my drunk. I dabbled in cocaine to the point of bankruptcy a few times, but I could leave it alone. But the alcohol, I don't know if it was because it was legal and or whatever, you know. I could pick it up in a store, you know. I was controlling and enjoying it. And all this macho bullshit that was going on, you know. Not realizing I was just a scared little boy from Ivanhoe, you know, that really didn't know what to do. I made so many plans to quit drinking. My first son was born in 1992, and you know, that was a special time. And my real father, he had problems with the drink. You know, my parents divorced when I was, I don't know, second or third grade, and I definitely wasn't going to be like him. And I hated it when my mother, who was the primary parent in my life, and God rest her soul, but when she'd say, you know, you're just like your dad, I couldn't stand it. And I guess by every form of self-deception and experimentation, I was going to be different, you know, one way or another. Drawing a blank now. That's going to happen a lot. My mind wanders. I can't get prepared for these because I'm going to follow a damn plan anyway. You know, I got that alcohol card head. But oh, back to the kids. And my middle boy, Trevor, came in 93. And it was the same thing every time. And you know, I was going to settle down. I was able to, you know, work. I had a fine career. It's just alcohol, alcohol, alcohol. And days off, you know, it would start in the morning. But it just dominated my life. I was, you know, the drunk basketball coach. You know, I was embarrassing my kids and stuff. My youngest son, Kyle, was born in 1997. He has autism. And we bonded real close. But, you know, I mean, I was drinking on the way to Valley Children's Hospital, you know, for his, like, all these special tests we'd have him on, you know. I mean, I operated on, you know, I couldn't tell you what my blood alcohol was, but it was just, I know my friend A.W. calls me chronic, but it was just chronic. So, you know, I did the best I could. Life just spiraling out of control. I had a little piece of property over in Lindsay. My family life was a shambles. You know, my incomparable demoralization probably came more after I had a little clarity and just thinking, you know, how tough I was on my sons. You know, I said the joke, you know, they thought their name was Load the Truck until they were 11 years old, you know, and the fucking school made them change it, you know, and wear them tags and shit, you know. But I was so twisted, I vicariously tried to live my life through them, you know. I'd get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and drop them off at the weight room and, you know, and they were good athletes and they were good students. They were everything I never could be, but it was never good enough for me. You know, the alcoholism spiraling, and it soon became apparent that I wasn't gonna be able to stay with their mom. Where I worked, you know, the price of corn jumped up and we lost a big account in Utah. So I got a sweet gig and did, you know, a geographical. And I went over to, in my trade, and I took another position for a pretty well-known company. And my alcoholism just spiraled out of control. I started becoming a morning drinker, you know, just to get rid of the shakes. And after about a year, I wore out my welcome. They also had drug and alcohol testing. And they surprised us one morning. And I didn't even know. I didn't sign to have it. Drug and alcohol testing, you got to be out of your mind, you know. I'm good. But but I tested positive, like almost illegally drunk, and the test was like at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it was, and they called me in, and you know what happened, and I said, well, you know, it's a late night, you know, and I was working on that machine, and I didn't really thought that people frowned upon stuff like that, so they drew up a thing, you know, no drinking on the facilities, crazy rules, you know, you can't drink here, you know. They told me about all this high-priced equipment that I was managing and all these employees and stuff, and then I went along, I got a good evaluation, and they came in at 1 o'clock. We had an employee get hurt, and I guess he said that, you know, that I was about three sheets in the wind most of the time. And it was just after lunch, and I was trying to control and enjoy it. And I was right on the border of, I don't know, 0.1, 0.08 or something like that. And they wanted to come down a little harder, and I made it easy for them and just left. They, you know, said they were going to cut my wages and put me on this probation stuff. And then I could drink full time. And I did. I was good at it. I had a hard time keeping a job. You know, I've always had ways to make a little here and make a little there. And I thought I was getting by just fine. I went to work for this different kind of agriculture operation, and it was pretty fascinating. I learned a lot, but, you know, I mean, my life was spiraling out of control. I mean, you know, when you drink when you don't want to, you know, that's about as dark as it got for me, you know, and I realized that I had to drink just to exist. I kind of white-knuckled, kind of tapering, and, you know, those guys that had been farming these row crops for 40 years, they weren't doing it my way, you know, after about 11 months, and I told them, you know, what I thought about it, and I just became totally unemployable, and there it went. Soon after that, as a lot of you know, that it wasn't long before I entered Alcoholics Anonymous. I turned yellow at one point, and it's kind of a little scare. So, just like chapter 3, I quit getting Jack Daniels and Sky Vodka, and I just started beer and wine. I was on this little program. I started with 72 ounces of beer for breakfast, you know, to get rid of the shakes, and I just drank wine. Funniest thing there happened is I grew a man boob, just one. And yeah, I know. I couldn't even get man boobs right, you know. I was just half measures, you know, half measures. It's now called gynecomastia, and it has to do with the liver and your hormones and everything. And I was quite a mess, and so I went to the doctor for the first time in quite a long time, unless it was to fix a bone or get stitches. And, you know, hey, doc, I got this boob, you know. And anyway, it was just a little cheap-ass country clinic, but they were pretty amazed at it, too. Yeah, you sure did. Well, you know, my mom's was a breast cancer survivor, so, I mean, it kind of took it seriously. And, I mean, God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself before I even had a God, I guess. And that was about the time of my last real good bender. And I'd also have this, what they call AFib, where my heart would kick up out of control, like 140 to 160 beats per minute. And I would control it by sitting still and then drinking slower, you know. And about time for another one of my boob appointments was my last real good bender, and it had stayed that way for a week. And I was flipped, and I was down to just a couple glasses of wine a day. You know, I thought I was dying, so I went on this long taper, went through the withdrawals, the second follow up point, I went there and I tried to get in. You know, I mean, I kept calling every day. Hey, my heart's really going out. Well, we don't have any openings today, you know. And call 911. Fuck yeah, call 911. You know. So I ended up on that visit. They told me to go to the emergency room or a cardiologist and asked me if I wanted to take an ambulance. No, I'm fine. I drove here. I'll drive there, you know. And I drove to my girlfriend worked for a cardiologist, and they got me in. And they looked at all the EKGs where, you know, the squiggly lines and stuff. And he said, I think we can do it with medication. And I'll never forget. And I was glad because I wanted a drink, you know. And so they gave me free samples and a script. And I went home and I stopped and got my favorite 3-pack of Grandes, you know. And I took this medicine, and I had one of those blood pressure things on, you know. And I was sitting there drinking, watching my blood pressure go down and my pulse go down. And I thought, shit, I got this whooped, you know. I mean, yeah, take these pills, you know, drink beer, and hold this thing on your arm. And they called me in for some more follow-up tests, and then I had some blockage. And so they had a stent. So I was planning my drinking around this little heart procedure that they had. And then it's funny because Thursday night I read with a partner. He might call me a sponsor, but it's more of a partner to me. And I really enjoy my Thursday nights reading. And we read to the wives for this other events that are going on in my life. And it said right there, sometimes your husband will drink on the way home from the hospital. And I did. After having heart surgery, I made my girlfriend stop at the store to get beer on the way back. You know, I identified with that right off the bat. But get into a long story. In the hospital with my heart surgery, I turned yellow again, but this time with a med they gave me in the hospital. And that set the ball rolling. Once again, God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself before I even realized any of this was happening. Looking back now, I had a lot of angels out there. I'm looking at a room full of them right now. And so my girlfriend's doctor was a really aggressive guy. And he ordered a CT scan, or I'm not saying if I'm saying that right, but where you go in the tube and they take a comprehensive picture. And I was diagnosed with cirrhosis of the liver from that 40-year-old progressive disease that I'm sure is still progressing in me today. You know, I have not the ability to take so much as a drink. And, you know, it's thinking back about him because, you know, he's from Iraq, and I know he's we had just blown his country up to many things, and he's become a personal friend. And I always say, you know, Dr. A, you saved my life, and he always gives credit to God. And that really tells me, you know, I think he probably understands God a little different than I understand God, but we both pray to a God of our understanding, and it's invaluable in my life today. Fast forward, he got me into the University of San Francisco, and they sent me to you guys. You guys didn't know you can avert death and misery from your fellows, did you? But I was directed to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I remember the doctors there. I had a good cop and a bad cop, and the bad cop was this little Asian chick. I know my girlfriend called her Lucy Liu or whatever, and she looked like she just kicked the hell out of you at any given time. She thought I was a real prize. I didn't like her a bit. I don't think she likes. She's a friend now. But they both of the doctors said that AA is not for any for everyone. It's a religious program, and there I was, last house on the block. You know, what are you going to do? I was the guy in the Daily Reflection that was holding on to that flimsy reed when he was drowning. I had two things that I think really benefited me when I got here. One was the gift of desperation. The other was I was totally ignorant to the steps, to the fellowship, to anything to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think it benefited me. I was sent here in 2002 by Tulare County, and I had one of my employees sign my card. They ran a meeting over in Woodlake, and I think if I would have had a preconceived deal, because the only thing I had when I got here was just the tiniest bit of willingness, and if it weren't for desperation, my mind would have been totally closed. You know, it's in my DNA. I got this. You know, that page 62, the selfish, it's my zip code. But so I met you guys, and I went to the Alano Club, met Ole. I love Ole. I really do. I really do. He's a personal friend, you know. I went up and shook his hand. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what y'all, you know, you did. And he told me he had a liver. And he told me that, you know, he had the liver transplant deal, so just gave me a hope. I didn't know when he got it or anything, but it gave me a little hope. You know, I wasn't alone. On a total whim, well, actually a lot of estrogen was in my house and I just had to get out. I pulled out my schedule because I was going to the Alano Club collecting signatures, and I was sure when I had 90 on however many pieces of paper I got, I was good, you know, because I was already past the month spot, you know, at that time as far as sobriety. And I ended up at Bridge Street Junks on a Wednesday night, and there was three guys and me, and so for the first time, you know, I told a little bit about my story or what I was doing there. And still associated with all these three guys. One guy's the landlord of the great mentor. And he handed me a liver support group meeting, and I went once and didn't like it. But I went the next morning, and it's hard to describe. I mean, this was really God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. He just put me right in the perfect place. There was a lot of time. There were two people in the medical field, Home of the Homeless, Hope for the Hopeless. You know, there was everything there. It also helped me identify with people from all different walks of life, all different things. The only thing that was important is that we're all alcoholics and we're all trying to get better one day at a time. Remember one morning, you know, because I'm still, you know, I got this stuff, you know. I'm Mitchell Knox. Come on, you know, I'll figure it out. Didn't take me long to be the smartest person in the room. And that's character. And today I realize I know only very little, you know. I mean, but, and this guy came in on a bad hangover. This is the only time I've ever seen this guy now. If I've seen him again, I couldn't recognize him. And he was pale, shaken. And he said this time he was going to work the steps and get a sponsor. So kind of a little bell rang. Maybe I'll try that. But even at that point, I tried it because I wasn't going to leave any stone turned over. You know, if I failed this sobriety, you know, I'd put it on my deathbed. You know, I did everything and I still died. You know, I'd blame probably everybody, you know. What a ride. You know, and it still is today, you know. Working one-on-one with an alcoholic, if you're new, if you don't have a sponsor, you know, if you're sponsoring yourself, I mean, my route was a sponsor for sure. I feel today that I not only have sponsors, but I got a ton of people that I can call at any given point. Reyes is nodding his head. Yeah, you called me last week. You didn't know what the hell. You know. But I was not raised in a religious household, but I, you know, like my mom, I was raised with morals and right and wrong, and I just kind of knew I was wrong. Which was also a benefit for me, I guess. I didn't know how to pray. The Serenity Prayer is the first prayer that I ever knew by heart. And, you know, like so many new people, I wore it out, you know. I guess, I was probably proud that I probably, in my head, I couldn't fucking say the Serenity Prayer better than anybody could say the Serenity Prayer, though. But I was praying. I love the part at the end of the doctor's opinion when he says, if you come to scoff, continue to pray. One of my character defects, I still scoff a lot, but I have continued to pray since I've been here. The prayers that are in the book. It's hard to describe, you know, so many things have gone on. I know early on in recovery, and it's just happened today, and it resonated with me more this year than it did at the time. And I realized how profound it was. But there's a morning reflection. I read the reflection book every morning. And I go to a meeting that is loosely based, very loosely based on the daily reflection. It's sometimes based in Monterey, you know. It could be based any fucking where you want it to be. But anyway, I love them. I love them. I have, but wouldn't be here without them. But I was so sick that first year. You know, I was down to 150 pounds. I was yellow. I couldn't hold food down. And I learned that you could read those books without your head exploding, and they were moving. They truly were. But I got, As Bill Sees It, and I didn't have a bookmark, and I was laying in bed, and I read the first 44 pages. Can't explain it. Four's my favorite number. I didn't have a bookmarker, so I read four. Then I read to 14. Then I read to 24, you know, just kind of trying to read myself to sleep. And then the next morning I come into that meeting, and the daily reflection was right there, the last page I'd read that night. Is that odd? Or is it God? You know, and it hit me. It was just that simple, you know. And I chose to think it was God, just like he was talking to me. And I really perked up, you know. Thank you, Richard. That's another shot. Mike Kreger and Charles asked me to go on this AA camp out, and it was over in Mammoth. I'd never been to that side of the thing, and I was really looking forward to it. And it was all that and more spectacular than you can imagine. It's so beautiful over there. It's just like postcard panoramas everywhere you look. I got the play golf on the nicest golf course that I've ever seen, you know, and it was a really good time. Richard and I were on the same dinner crew, you know. It's not really hazing, but the first year, you know, they get the newcomers to do the work, you know, and so we're on the dinner crew, and you know, when it was all said and done, everybody on our crew was just kind of slipping off into the meeting. And then I looked over there and I saw Richard, and he was washing the dishes, and they had him wear some, you know, I think the apron said kitchen bitch and stuff. And I could just, and you know, the glow that we get, you know, when you're about 2-3 months or however, but just the glow, you know, I mean. And I just looked over there, and he was just so happy and peaceful. And, you know, that to me is what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. You know, I came here, I was dying, I had no morals, my family was in shambles, my three sons that I loved so much only came around out of some kind of sense of duty that I never had to anyone in my life, or just because they felt sorry for me. It was pretty pitiful. You guys made me feel welcome. Still make me feel welcome every meeting I ever come to. That same partner that I have in reading, you know, we read the first tradition. And I want to be here. I want to be anywhere if it wasn't for the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous. I came here. All I had was the third tradition. That's the only thing I had in common with any of you was a desire to stop drinking, an honest desire. I didn't know how. I got a sponsor on a whim. I worked the steps. I try to live by the steps to the best of my ability. I have to participate. I have to participate. I still have a piece of paper that says, that was directing me to those first 90 meetings, that says, if he has that much time left. But, you know, I mean, this program, it not only saved all our lives, it gave me a life that I look forward to waking up every morning. That I can be the father like Richard was talking about. That I can be present. This last year's it's been a challenge. You know, I lost my mother in June. For a whole year before she died, I got to go and take care of her for about 3 hours a day until she had to go on to assisted living, which, you know, that didn't last long. But I got to do that. I got to be a part. I got to be the son that I never was, and I got so much back. Those three boys, you know, they were close to their grandma. They're real close to losing their mother. The family that I wreaked havoc on for 20 years, you know, just totally made a shambles of. They actually asked me to be part of the family meeting, you know, when the cancer doctors told her, you know, there's nothing left they can do. And you know, I don't know about any of y'all, but, you know, I made amends and I made them to the best of my ability. But just to be able to be there with my kids and her, it just reaffirmed my love and admiration for Alcoholics Anonymous. It works. It works. You know, I want to be here today. I feel so totally grateful for the people I've met here. It says it in the book. Everything in the book I've come to read to you. You'll find friends here that'll last a lifetime. And I surely know that. I have maybe two acquaintances. Yeah, I have friends, but that I'm in contact with from my life before now. And I know there's people in here that, as long as I do my part, as long as I suit up and show up, that we'll be those friends for a lifetime. We'll be together on the road to happy destiny. God bless y'all. Thanks for listening.